Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The wait is over. A triple header of fun is upon us this week. Football's in effect. The NBA Finals are here, and the MLB playoffs are in full swing. You might go to some of these games, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on everything, from game spreads, totals, to teams, player, coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Welcome to The Bird Calls, and let's end our week with our final episode in our Drew Holiday trade package extravaganza. I am David Grubb, contributor to The Bird Writes, along with fellow contributors David Fisher and Elliot Clough, and our editor-in-chief, Mr. Ali Cosell. Gentlemen, we've covered Denver, Chicago, Phoenix, Atlanta, Miami, and Golden State. Today, we've got three more as we wrap up: Boston, Brooklyn, and the Indiana Pacers. Before we get into that, the city uniforms are official. Gentlemen, your reactions to the Pelicans' new gear. Elliot, I'll let you start.
You know, I think the initial reaction from everybody was just, oh, what are these things? And they're starting to grow on me. They're not awful. I mean, it's not like we're seeing the Swamp Dragon uniforms again or anything like that. But they're okay. They're not bad. I can deal with it. I think it'll grow on me more once we see them on the players, too.
All right. Ali?
Yeah, that's pretty much my first reaction. I tweeted that out. The only thing I don't like, honestly, is the font or the numbers, or maybe having, like, say, New Orleans, the Pelicans, something, some kind of writing on the front of the jersey. But other than that, I think the colors work fine. I love the shorts. And it looks like, when you look at the pictures, the warm-ups, they look like they're going to be looking good, too. So no problems, really, overall.
Fish,
you know what I'm gonna say, man. That's, if you're a Husky guy, that's not a good look.
Oh, like, no, it's gonna look color, like a
you're gonna have color up on the shoulders, and you're gonna have color down by your knees, and then from like mid chest to mid thigh, it's just white.
That's a good reason for Zion to stay fit this season, right?
And so, the numbers are so very thin, too. The numbers are super thin.
That is true.
Like, that's a super thin number one that they're going to put on right on his stomach.
Yeah.
Right on his stomach.
Everybody's going to – Aaron Nelson's going to look him dead in the eye as he puts it on every single time.
Yeah, it's going to be the curvature in the Zion number curvature index.
Yeah,
like from game to game, we'll be looking at side photos and seeing the angle of that one and if it changes so we can know if he's in shape or not.
Yeah, if that one starts bending on his chest, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, if it starts to look like an accent aigu from French, you know, you get half of it cut off because it's rolling up under his gut. Yeah, then that's no good. That's not a good thing.
What were we laughing about a couple of years ago at a game? Was it Solomon Hill coming back and
he
looked really big?
Solomon Hill came back from injury and it looked like his jersey had been washed. It looked like that episode of Seinfeld when Costanza got the cotton uniforms and they washed him and shrunk. He looked like he was wearing his son's
uniform.
It was
like two sizes too small. Yeah.
Yeah, like he borrowed it from the team store. That's what it looked like. Like, it was that tight. You could see his twig and his berries. You know, it was that tight. Solomon's Hills were out and about. But I am not a fan of the uniforms. It just doesn't work for me. I also think it's funny, though, when people start putting the fire emoji under them, because nobody, even if you kind of like them, no, don't put the fire emoji. Nobody. They're not that. No, they're not fire.
The Pelicans came out with that, and then, I don't know, like 15 minutes, 30 minutes later, the San Antonio Spurs were like, here's our Fiesta uniforms, black, and it just housed it. Come on, man. Compared to that, let alone, I mean, we were seeing what the Hornets were doing earlier in the week. The Pelican City uniform is not good. The only good uniform thing that is likely to come out is if the Pelicans came out and said, hey, remember those earned uniforms that everybody really liked that also kind of had the city flag on them? We're going to make those our standard white uniforms because no one likes the original white uniforms
No one does. And just burn the blue ones. We should never be seen ever again. What did you think of our friend Fletcher Mackle said that the picture that the Pelicans sent a statement. Now, the four jerseys that were hanging in there, it was Zion, Lonzo, JJ, and Jax. They said, well, they don't have B.I. because he's a free agent, and they don't have Drew because they might trade him. But there are a lot of other Pelicans who are coming back. There's no Josh Hart up there who's a fan favorite. There's, you know, so, I mean, it's like there are players up there who you would expect to see. I don't think that picture means anything.
Is that how they set up in the locker room?
I mean, I was just going to bring that up, Fish.
They don't
Ball
sit
and
like
Williamson
that.
Sat next to each other in the locker room. I can't remember who was to the right of Williamson. David, was it Redick?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's Ball, Williamson, Redick, Hayes.
No,
but I'm talking about what we saw last time we attended a game.
In the actual locker room, Jax was closer to the front last year.
Jax was all the way to the left. Drew was all the way on the right side.
And Drew was always in the corner.
Who was in the right corner? I think it was Darius Miller, right?
Drew and Darius were in that corner. They had it was because Darius lived in the Kentucky corner that we used to call it. Remember, we used to call it Kentucky Corner. And
oh,
Drew.
That's right. Yes, yes.
Because it was four
Drew was
straight
next
Kentucky
to each
guys
one on the right
Drew.
Wall.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't to me. This doesn't really. It doesn't mean anything. I think they just wanted a cross section of jerseys.
Yeah, to the left of Ball was B.I., I just remembered, but it's the picture cuts that off, so we can't see. Yeah.
Right. I just, you know, you set them up, you grab them, and I mean, who knows? If those might have been the guys who were in the building taking their individual shots in the uniforms that day. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. So I don't read anything to it. So I think people are reading so many headlines.
Yeah, Griff
now
would
that
not do something
anything.
Like that. I'm sorry. They would not do something intentional like that.
No, that's a tell and a shade.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No need to read into it.
No, but people will. And that's the thing. It's like, why? But what I don't like, though, is, and you know, we all like Fletcher, but I don't like that. That's kind of stoking it and saying it's intentional. That's not our role to say it is in that point. You know what I mean? Like, unless you've got something that says it is, I think from a journalistic standpoint, I wouldn't say it. That's just me. Okay, so you got Boston, Brooklyn, and the Pacers today. We're going to start with Boston. And since Elliot is the only one who had not been tasked with setting up a team, and Boston has emerged as a name, Elliot, you shall have the floor, my friend, and present your Boston Celtics best and your most logical and then your most optimal trades.
All right, so I have two trades, and I think, I don't know, I didn't necessarily go for the most logical, most optimal. I think they're both logical, and I think they're both optimal. So you guys can take your pick here, but I'll start off. First one is Kemba, and should they acquire a top 10 pick, which one way or another, I think they can figure that out. So Kemba plus a top 10 pick, wherever that ends up being for Drew. And the second one is Marcus Smart, Romeo Langford, Daniel Tice, that top 10 pick, and then for Drew Holiday and the 13th pick.
All right, so Ollie in this case, I will let you be David Griffin. And so Danny Ainge just called you. And these are the two deals he put on the table.
And I'm laughing about the first one, because if you don't want to keep Holiday for financial reasons, you know, obviously extending him, then why would you want to bring in Kemba, who's got 3 years left on his deal? I know his last one's a player option, but he's also making about $35 million plus over those final 3 years each season. So, like I said, same age point guards, but Kemba's actually got more troubling injury history with his knees. So I just personally feel like Boston basically threw his name out there, because that's who, like, their experts, their fans, all their followers would prefer send packing from, you know, that roster that kind of makes sense. And they're saving Gordon Hayward to send to Indiana for Miles Turner. So, no, I don't buy that this deal is going to be structured right around Kemba for Drew. And then Pelicans are going to be happy with just, like, say the number six through Atlanta or maybe some other pick in that area. And here's one more thing people don't understand. Do you think Boston's really even interested in having to pay a 15% trade kicker by moving Kemba to New Orleans? You know, people in Boston, they have kind of taken a step back and looked at it. They also say it would send a bad message, because you just brought in Kemba. You hyped him up just a year ago. And Danny Ainge doesn't want kind of that image of, you know, okay, things went south after 1 year, we're going to ship you out. So I heard that that's also in play. So,
Ollie,
no,
I just want to trade guys. Yeah, Ollie, I just want to second off your point, too, is remember what Anthony Davis's father used against the Celtics publicly about their treatment of Isaiah Thomas. So if you go back on this and you say, well, look, this is a repeated pattern in Boston that they are just using you as a chip to get something else, then, yeah, I think that – and then, like you said, the money alone, $108 million over the next 3 years for Kemba Walker at the age of 30. Yeah.
No. I mean, if Griff, like I say, he's talked about flexibility, this is almost got to be a no-go unless Kemba can be routed somewhere else and then the Pelicans get an expiring or something else, right? So, yeah, I'm canceling that first one. Elliot, what was your second one? I think that we would probably give it a thumbs up, because I heard Marcus Smart's name and no Kemba's.
Yes, Marcus Smart, Romeo Langford, Daniel Tice. Let's say it's the sixth pick or something like that. And then in exchange for Drew Holiday and the 13th pick.
Yeah, I think that sounds very doable. I don't know what everybody's salaries are, how long they last, but I can't imagine Tice or Langford being any kind of impediment.
Tice is expiring. Langford has 3 years, $3.6 million, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, you know, I think Smart's a steal. What is he making, like 12, 13, 14, something like 13, that? And he's under contract for another couple years?
2 years, yep.
Yeah, and he's exactly the guy you feel like they want to bring in this locker room, right? Or at least one of those type of guys. They want somebody vocal in that locker room. So Smart would be perfect. So, yeah, no qualms with me on this.
They have to re-sign Tice, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah, he's on an expiring deal. He's on a 1 year left, $5 million.
Right, okay. So
he's a contract coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do we have another opinion on that? Or otherwise,
I'm just trying to think myself. Is that, yeah, the salary for Smart makes sense. I mean, that works. There is just, yeah, it's just you still just don't have a primary ball handler on the floor. So unless you're going to get one from somewhere, you got to know where you get a real ball handler from in the half court.
Probably going to be in that top 10. I mean, if they don't go Okongwu, they're probably going to go Hayes there.
So yeah, they have to get a point guard. They'd have to know they're getting that point guard. Right. So that would mean somebody's got to – they'd have to have an arrangement to make that pick. And that means that trade could not happen until draft night.
You know, right, exactly. Have, yeah.
As the picks fall down.
Right. And or they, you know, the name that I brought up a decent amount, not a ton on my podcast, but it's DJ Augustine. Pursue him like hell. Obviously, that's going to be in free agency, so that'll be post-draft. But I think he'd be excellent in SBG system.
My guy is Trey Burke. Okay. I mean, like, I think that's just me. And I'm not saying it against DJ Augustine. Sure, I just think I like Burke. And my position on Burke has been just he can score. He's shown the ability to run an offense. And, you know, you could play him on or off ball at times. I think he's a more consistent scorer than DJ Augustine. But that, if that's not what you're asking for, if you're asking for DJ, yeah, to do something completely different. I just don't want to get the Jameer Nelson that the Pelicans got, you know, at the end of his career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not being tight right now. Getting sidetracked.
Yes, I'm sorry. So you're right. Thank you for reining me in. So now, Fish, you are Danny Ainge. And you've, so from your perspective as a Celtics, you know, what do you think of those deals?
On the Celtics end, we're heartless. We don't care. I mean, Kemba Walker, he's the biggest free agent signing the franchise has ever had, and we'll ship him out in a year because, I mean, the only players that we have any feelings about right now are Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. That's it. All the rest of them are just assets with contracts that bounce basketballs. On Boston's side, I think they would rather ship off Walker than Smart because Drew Holiday is just a different version of Smart. He's more capable offensively, but I mean you can put Smart on power forwards. Like he will guard anyone that you put in front of him. And we've already seen Drew Holiday, once you get bigger wings and stuff like that, it becomes a problem. Now, at the same time, I mean, it's just they're spending a lot at that point to take on more salary, and then they still don't have a center answer, especially if they're including Tice. So if I'm Boston, what I'm doing is I'm calling up Indiana and I'm saying, how do you feel about Gordon Hayward? And
yeah, those rumors are flying.
And how do you feel about Gordon Hayward? And is either, can we obtain Miles Turner here in Boston so that we have a center answer? And then we will be substantially more willing to ship out Tice as well. And if we can ship out Gordon Hayward and Tice, and we get Turner and Holiday, then what else do we need to do to make it happen? That obviously gets funky on the salary cap end of things. Or can you route Turner to New Orleans and they'll be happy and we'll keep Tice? So the only outgoing contract on Boston's side would be Gordon Hayward.
If you were Indiana, would you ask for Robert Williams instead? Because you're giving up a big and if they're getting a starting center, I would, you know, you'd want somebody again who maybe can protect the rim some. Williams played very solid for them as a rookie. Would he be more attractive to you? Would you say, well, I gotta have, yeah, give me Tice and Williams in that case, because I'm taking on $34 million in salary here?
I'd push back on Williams, but we could do Hayward and Tice to Indiana, and then we'll take on Holiday. And then from there, we're going to package all those first-round picks to try to give New Orleans the prime asset they're looking for in terms of a high-level pick.
How does Indiana get their relief, though? Because, like, I mean, they're giving out double the salary. You know, I mean, taking on double the salary to bring in Hayward. You know, how do they mitigate that? Because they're gonna have to send something else out in that regard.
Who was gonna present Indiana today? Was
me?
That me?
No, I'm all right. The Pacers. Okay. I know. I'm not trying to reveal nothing from my side. I'm just saying. Because if you're gonna call me,
honestly, all three of these teams, I think, are related because Indiana. And absolutely, to a certain degree, Atlanta are potential, you know, third team facilitators.
Yep.
Okay. So then let's move.
But real quick, do you guys buy that Griffin would at all take Kemba Walker? That's one thing I'm curious to hear.
I don't see
it. Yeah. So would it have to be Smart then?
Got to be the pick. Yeah. Again, the pick is going to be the most important part of that.
Pick is going to be huge. They're going to need to.
But remember what Griff was supposedly rumored. He wants at least a good young player and a pick. He preferred two good young players, but I think he would take just Smart and the pick, right?
Yeah, it could be just Smart and a pick, or if Boston finds a way to get Hayward taken by Indiana, if it's Turner and then a pick, I think David Griffin walks away quite happy with that situation as well.
What I was thinking too.
If I can talk on the Walker thing. So the reason I saw that first, that was one of the first rumors that I saw about who they'd be willing to give up. But looking at Basketball Reference for Kemba Walker, in terms of his health, he's played 60-plus games in every single season that he's played, not counting 2019-2020 because it was a shortened season. 56 games, he started all 56. And if you bring in Walker and get, like, the sixth pick overall and somehow Onyeka Okongwu falls that low, one, you're getting defense that way, who we mentioned Onyeka Okongwu possibly being a defensive player of the year in the future. So you got a core of center a core of Williams, Brandon Ingram, assuming, you know, they sign him to a max, which would be like freaking crazy if they didn't. And then Okongwu under the basket. And then you're making up for losing Drew. So you got a starting point guard right there in Kemba, who is a better scorer, has averaged more than, I think, 25 points a game. Let's see here. Sorry, just once. But he's averaged more than 20 points a game every year since 2015. So you're making up for the scoring. I think he's a pretty decent complement to Williams and Brandon Ingram on the offensive side of the ball. You'd have to find a shooting guard one way or another, whether that's through free agency or what have you. But I think if you get Okongwu at the center position, or, I don't know, Wiseman's not as good of a defender. But I think it could pan out fairly well. Obviously, the salary is an issue. But he is on that player option, and if it doesn't go well, he can decline that player option. Preferably, that's a club option, but it is a player option. So I don't think it's the end of the world, and if it doesn't necessarily work super well offensively, like Ollie said, you can try to flip him.
No, I can see – I can definitely see the argument for Kemba, because Kemba will operate in the half court. And that's something that the Pelicans desperately need. Like, he can make the offense passable, more than passable. I mean, he can be the engine of your half-court offense. I guess my concern with Kemba is largely defensive, because the Pelicans are a bad defensive team as currently constructed. And if you take away Drew Holiday and you add in Kemba Walker, it's gotten measurably worse. And then my second concern with adding Kemba Walker, not just on defense, is the fact that now you just added a guy who's only 6 foot tall, isn't going to contribute on the boards. Brandon Ingram's about an average defender. I mean, rebounder for his position. So far, Zion Williamson on the defensive glass is a well below average rebounder. So, I mean, you're creating more holes than you're solving. You're just saying we need to fix the half court offense, which I get that. I get that approach, but at the same time, when I'm looking at the Pelicans, offense is not the priority in a general case. We can just lean heavily on Brandon Ingram, make him much more of a creator, get the ball in his hands more, and feed Zion Williamson more. There's options there on offense. And that's one of the things that frustrates me on Twitter, is that everyone's just focused on offense, offense, offense. And I'm like, man, offense isn't the problem for New Orleans right now. The problem is they lack options defensively. There are massive holes on the team defensively, and they need to start building that team around their cornerstones of Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. Kemba Walker's not how you do that.
Any final thoughts on that, on the Celtics?
That's a fair argument too. I'm totally with you guys. I understand why you wouldn't be for it. And defense is definitely a primary issue. Defense in that contract, absolutely. So I definitely understand both sides of it.
Yeah, especially with Lonzo's deal coming up, if you do bring him back, and Hart's deal, it starts to make it really difficult to keep the young players that you like in exchange, essentially, for Kemba Walker's deal, and go into an uncertain economic future with that almost $40 million a year hung up on a plus 30-year-old. Okay, so we move on to Indiana. Well, before we do that, let's vote it up or vote it up or down. I will start with you. How likely do you think the Celtics are as a trade partner, either as a two-team or as a facilitator for a three-team? and how preferred are they for you as a destination or a partner?
I think it's one of the likeliest, probably in my top three of being a likely deal or involved in a deal with the Pelicans. And I've got to think
straight up or as with a three all their assets.
Probably a three teamer. You know, it just seems like that's what it's going to be with most teams involved for Jrue Holiday to me.
All right. And then as preferred, where do they sit for you? You said likely.
Oh, they're up at the top. Yeah. They're at the top. Yeah. Cause I mean, if you can grab a decent player, like, or I should say a good player like Smart, and then walk away with a pick upgrade, I think that's the best you can hope for.
Fish, if they don't get the pick, like for this whole thing, it hinges on the pick, would you say, with Boston? Yes.
A lot of it does. But still, a lot of it hinges on what are they going to put on the table, or what third team are they going to route Hayward to, pretty much, exactly. Because Hayward's the most likely.
And last for Elliot, what is your thought? You know, just in looking at it, is it likely? And what do you like? You know, do you like working with Boston?
I do. I think it's going to be more likely to be. I mean, it's just going to be a three-team trade more than likely with any of these teams that we've brought up. And I think so far of the teams that I've listened to one of the other two podcasts that I wasn't on, but I think this is going to be the most likely of the two-team trades that we talked about so far. And I think it's got to be Marcus rather than Kemba. So I like it, and I think it's fairly likely, becomes all that more likely once you start factoring in third teams like the Pacers or possibly, I don't know how the Nets would work in here, but definitely the Pacers.
All right. Well, then let's move to the Pacers. A team that the Pelicans have had their eye on for quite some time, and that centers around Miles Turner, both, I guess, figuratively and literally. So I have two deals. One is a basic two-team deal, and the other three-team. In the two-team, the Pelicans give up Jrue, and the Pacers give up Turner and Doug McDermott. Picks don't change hands because it's not really, you know, it's no gain for the Pelicans, obviously, in giving that pick away. And I don't think it's the Pacers would want the Pelicans 13. It may have to be a pick in another year for that deal if the Pacers want a pick. I don't think they want this year's Pelicans pick. They might want to trade into for one of the Lakers picks down the road or something like that, but that would be my thought on that one. The three team is between the Pacers, the Pelicans, and the team we're talking about next, the Brooklyn Nets. And this is Alex Golden, who covers the Pacers. He threw this one at me, and I was intrigued by it. So in this deal, the Pacers would get Jrue Holiday, Taurean Prince. the Pelicans would get Spencer Dinwiddie and Miles Turner. And the Nets would get Victor Oladipo, TJ McConnell, and the Pels send them a second-round pick. So in this exercise, Elliot, you get to be the Pacers, and we'll start with you.
All right. Well, let's see here. Sorry, I was writing down everything to make sure I keep track. The first one, I am taking that in a heartbeat. That way you have your primary center and you've got it done. You don't have to worry about doing the Twin Tower thing with Turner and Sabonis. You got Sabonis. He's your guy going forward. And you bring in Jrue. You have the trifecta of the Holidays, assuming they bring back Justin Holiday. You've got your point guard in Malcolm Brogdon. You got McConnell. And whether or not Oladipo's statement today through Shams Charania is true, if he wants to stay around, you still got Depot. And that's a pretty solid backcourt. You probably have to play Depot at the three and Jrue at the two, along with Brogdon at the one or something like that. That's kind of a small ball situation. But I'm not upset about getting rid of Doug McDermott and moving on from Turner. You got Jrue. I'm with it. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's just, I think, yeah, it probably leads to a second deal for Oladipo. I think that they'd want to move him with that. Sure. But you also still, your wing is not bad with Justin Holliday, and you could play Warren at the three or the four, and you know, and you have Sabonis, and you have some flexibility.
And they have Jeremy Lamb too, who's a good
player. Yeah, who played much better last year. So you know, even if you move Oladipo, that's still a very solid group.
Yeah, and if you get Gordon Hayward in exchange for Oladipo, there you go. So that's a pretty solid move from the Pacers' perspective. Now the second move, I'm gonna look at it here.
So Holiday and Prince to the Pacers, Dinwiddie and Turner to the Pelicans, and Oladipo, McConnell, and a pick to the Nets. Now the lure here for me, and just presenting it, let me just say the lure. And explaining for the Nets, it would be that both of those deals are expiring for Oladipo and McConnell, and it allows them to get some cap space off for guys who, you know, in Dinwiddie, who they probably won't sign to an extension, and you get Prince off the contract to, you know, free up money there as well. And for Brooklyn, it helps them with their long-term, being able to add another star maybe next year.
Okay. The issue for me from the Pacers' perspective, if they really love Gordon Hayward, is that's off the table because you don't have pieces necessarily to go get him, at least that, as far as I can see. I'm looking at the roster right now. Mm-hmm. Unless you want to give up Malcolm Brogdon to go get Gordon Hayward, I don't necessarily see how you work that out, or if you're willing to give up TJ Warren plus, I don't know, picks or Doug McDermott or something to that effect, you're out of the Gordon Hayward sweepstakes. So that could be an issue. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you love the acquisition of Drew. Torian's just a complimentary piece. You got your small forward in TJ Warren there. And Torian could play a second unit sort of role. Again, you got Jeremy Lin there too. But the acquisition of Drew is great. Again, you move on from Turner, which is not a problem. No problem with getting rid of that second round pick. That was from the Pelicans, sorry. Mm-hmm. It depends on how they feel about Gordon Hayward. I'm not near as high on Gordon Hayward anymore. I mean, after that injury, he just hasn't been the same player. And so I think from my perspective, this is good to go here too. I love having that trifecta of Holidays. I think that's huge for them. And I think you got sort of the clunk out, the junk out of your roster. It's a little bit more smoother. I think the locker room moves a little bit better. Drew is a soft-spoken guy. I don't know who your leader is, if it's Malcolm Brogdon or Domantas Sabonis, but I'm good with both, if I'm going to be honest. I can roll with both as the GM of the Pacers.
So Ollie, I'll let you be Ollie, I'll let you be the Pelicans this time, since Fish is going to be presenting for the Nets. I'll get his comment from that perspective as we move into him on the Nets. So I'll let you be the Pelicans in these circumstances.
Well, getting Miles Turner, I know that the Pelicans actually did have interest in him previously. So obviously it makes sense. They got a big hole at center. They've got to fill it. But now I just feel like, you know, if you look at what's happening now with all the news that's basically come out last few weeks or so, it feels like they're allowing a contender that's basically, you know, ready to win and win a lot, like say the Celtics, grab Miles Turner, and they're going to settle for, you know, a pick, right? So I feel like that's become the major focus for David Griffin. So suddenly I don't know if Indiana's as viable. So if I'm David Griffin and I see that I'm getting Spencer Dinwiddie, Miles Turner, I don't feel like that's given me the potential that I'm honestly seeking, right? You really made it well known that you do want some, you're valuing some kind of name here in this draft lottery, so you need that pick. So I don't know. I'm torn on it. If I'm strictly looking at it through David Griffin's lens, I probably wouldn't do the deal, even though it's a good one. I think the Pelicans win. They're getting the best end of this three-team deal especially, right? So, mm-hmm. But just getting Turner by himself, yeah, I guess I could see it. If there's nothing else better, I actually like him better for the long term than, say, grabbing something from Brooklyn where you're basically stuck with Jared Allen. So, I guess, yeah. I'm just not that enamored with Indiana anymore as a trade partner, I don't think. Not for one-on-ones, anyways.
Let me just run through some things on Turner real quick, because I had, you know, I just wanted to make sure and look at it. So, for the last three seasons, the average for Miles Turner has been, His offensive rebounding percentage is a little bit less than you'd like, but I think that's a function of the way he the role he has in Indiana. But his defensive rebounding percentage over 20%. His total rebounding percentage over 13%. His block percentage almost 7%. His win shares for 48 is a 0.127. He's 54% as a mid-range shooter, 36% from three, and he's averaging 124 blocks per season in his career. Last year, Favors, Hayes, Melly, Okafor, and Zion totaled 155 blocks.
I wonder what his paint defense overall was like. That's one thing I have not looked in a
he's
while.
He's had a so very solid gap between in his net rating. He's been very solid with that.
What I like too is he doesn't foul much. I know he's improved.
No,
that
he does not.
Career, so that would be big.
Yeah, so I mean, like his last three seasons, I think. He's had very good net ratings. His advanced numbers are extremely solid. It's just, you know, yeah, you'd like to see his offensive rebound numbers come up.
Yeah, he's a solid player.
But as a center,
and he fits next to Zion. I guess we should mention more positives, right? He does.
Yeah, the shot blocking alone and the defensive rebounding at 20%. That's just behind what Favors put up last year on defensive rebounding. Favors at 22. So you know, I mean. You know, Favors
he's going to be like 24. So yeah, you're taking care of that at $18 million a year. That's a pretty good deal.
In this market, when they're talking about giving 17, 18 to Hassan Whiteside, and you
let me jump in on that real quick on his rim protection numbers, which is not just shot blocking, right? But his ability to contest shots and the
this is what I wanted to hear.
Defensive field goal number. His is at 53% this last season.
Ooh, that's a little higher.
That's 16th in the league among big men who are challenging a lot of shots.
And he does challenge a lot.
So
that's average starter.
For instance, Anthony Davis was at 51.8. Serge Ibaka was at 52.1. Steven Adams was at 53.7. So he's kind of in that range. And then the fact that, I mean, he's a vastly greater shot blocker than a lot of those guys at this point in his career. I mean, other than pretty much the guys in Milwaukee, Giannis and Brook Lopez, every other big man in the league is above 50%. Like Gobert was at 50.2 and Miles Turner was at 53%.
And his block percentage was top five.
Hey, Fish, out of curiosity, what was Sabonis? I'm just curious.
Sabonis, like, I only took a screenshot of, like, the top 20. He's not in the list.
Okay.
So, I mean, Miles Turner is – I mean, there are concerns. Some people have concerns that, like, he does have the defensive rebounding numbers, but he isn't a terribly aggressive defensive rebounder. And he isn't a positive – in terms of his impact on the Pacers when he was playing, when he went off the court, they were a better defensive rebounding team. And you might look at that and say, he's not a very good defensive rebounder. I look at that and I know how the Pacers do their rotations. And I say, when he's not on the floor, Sabonis is, and Sabonis is a monster on the defensive glass. So, I mean, sometimes when you're looking at that number, that kind of context matters. Like, he's not as good of a defensive rebounder as Domantas Sabonis. There's a lot of room between not as good as Sabonis and, like, going downward before you reach, like, average. Like, right. You're still good at that point.
And there's a lot of growth potential there, too, on his defensive abilities.
And that's one of the other things I wanted to say is that his defensive three years ago, he had a lot of blocks, but his defensive protection numbers at the rim, not as good. Two seasons ago, he brought it down to 55.4. Last season, he brought it down to 53. He's young. He's showing year over year over the last 3 years, his defensive numbers at the rim are increasing. And like both of you have mentioned, he's doing that without fouling, which is something that Stan Van Gundy would love. And it's, I guess some people say, well, you're paying essentially market rate for Miles Turner in terms of his contract. His contract isn't a bargain, but you're not overpaying for him. How many 7-foot can defend the rim and stretch the floor and stay on the court guys are there in the NBA? Like, how many of those actually exist? Because that's what, when you look at the Pelicans and you're building around Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, that's what you need. So considering the specific needs of your cornerstones, shouldn't you be willing to pay a little bit more in terms of sending Jrue Holiday out if you can get Miles Turner and solve that equation, which honestly, the previous regime never solved the equation of Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center. Zion Williamson can't play center. I mean, he can play it in short bursts.
Not yet.
Yeah. He can play it in short bursts, but you know, to begin the first quarter, to begin the third quarter against, you know, good centers, he's not the rim protector we expected him to be yet. He's not nearly that force on the defensive glass that I had hoped he was going to be yet. And maybe that some of that is schematic and Stan Van Gundy is going to say, hey, let's prioritize getting the defensive rebound before we prioritize the highlight plays and Zion throwing three quarter length passes. So
2020 has been the year of things happening that are completely out of your control. But there is one thing you can control, and that's shaving your bush. Look, there's no need to be coy about it. You deserve to smell fresh and look great in all the right places, and Manscaped is here to help. They've got the Lawnmower 3.0, a premium electric trimmer that's designed to give you a confidence boost. The ceramic blade and skin-safe technology is designed to reduce nicks and tugs on your fellas down low. It's waterproof, comes with an LED light so you can manscape in the shower, the dark, or in a dark shower, whatever floats your boat. They've got the Shears 2.0 nail kit, which is the perfect add-on. It's a luxury four-piece nail kit featuring tempered stainless steel tools, and it includes tip tweezers, rounded point scissors, fingernail clippers, and a medium grit nail file. You can pluck eyebrows or trim nails in style. There's also the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. This will help you tame that summer swamp ass with natural hydrators and antioxidants. There's the Crop Reviver. It's a testy toner that's like having cologne that is designed for your balls. We won't judge if we catch you sniffing yourself. Go to manscaped.com and check out some of these life-changing products. In fact, listeners of this show will get 20% off plus free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code armchair. It's time to grab 2020 by the horns by shaving that front trunk. The wait is over. A triple header of fun is upon us this week. Football's in effect. The NBA Finals are here, and the MLB playoffs are in full swing. You might go to some of these games, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on everything, from game spreads, totals, to teams, player, coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So, to me, when I'm looking at the Pelicans, can you solve the center position? Can you get somebody there that you can trust? Is very high on the list, because if you answer that question, building the rest of the roster becomes very easy. And this is one of the things that you just have to deal with building around Zion Williamson, is if your best player is a power forward, who do you play at center becomes a massive question mark in the NBA and how the trajectory and how the game is played at this point. And you have
to. Yeah, but here's one thing we got to bring up just because of the news that's been relevant. And I love everything you said, David, but it more concerns from Indiana's point of view. They know, and Victor Oladipo especially knows, he has to rehab his image, right? So he's going to stick around, it sounds like, at least till the trade deadline. They've got Malcolm Brogdon. So I don't really see Jrue Holiday fitting in with those two. I know that they can play. There's a couple of guys that can play small forward in a pinch. But to me, if I'm Indiana, I would rather have Gordon Hayward soaking up those minutes as small forward. You know, Jrue Holiday going to Indiana was a lot more alluring when we all thought, honestly, Oladipo was out of there. So now I'm just, you know, from that point of view, with what we know now, it just doesn't seem as likely, right, guys? Of Indiana wanting Jrue, basically, and for a two-team deal at least being really on the table.
Yeah, I think it has to be a three-team at this point because of what you're saying, because they would have to want to add some depth at the small forward spot. But again, if the Pelicans can get Turner in this deal, I think it's even better than getting a top 10 pick in this draft, because you're getting a 24-year-old who's got 5 years of NBA experience, who has played in the playoffs each year of his career, is going to be significantly stronger than putting Jackson Hayes back out there again to try to figure out if he's going to be strong enough to play center minutes. And it's a guy who played 30 minutes a night in the league. So, I mean, like, yeah, if I see what you're saying, I absolutely understand it. That's why I think, you know, if you can facilitate a three, and it may even take four teams to make the deal work for everybody to be happy. But if anybody could figure it out, I think it would be those four front offices, because those are all very astute GMs.
The thing about Turner, too, is he's on this contract that Fish brought up for three more years. So you get him this season, the season after that, and 2022, 2023. You're paying him $17 million. And that's not breaking the bank by any means for a good center, a top eight center in the NBA that fits your scheme and is complementary to Zion and to Brandon Ingram. I take that 10 times out of 10.
All right, so let's vote quickly up and down on this one. Likelihood preference. Elliot, you could go first. Likelihood high, low, and preference.
I'm going to say high if there's a third team involved. Again, I mean, we'd kind of come record here, but it's got to probably involve a third team, whether it be the Nets or the Celtics or maybe the Nuggets. Whoever it ends up being, I'm going to say fairly high, if especially if a third team's in there. And I like it. If you end up with Miles Turner in it, I like it a lot. And, I mean, in this scenario, it doesn't necessarily look like you're getting that top 10 pick, but Pels can figure it out, whether that be free agency there or in the draft at 13. Can you get a combo guard at 13 or maybe Kyra Lewis falls? I think it works out, and I like it.
Fish.
Likelihood as the destination for Drew Holiday, I think it's quite low, actually, just because of the number of guards that Indiana already has on the roster. It makes it very difficult for them to figure out a number of other moves. Likelihood if Indiana's the third team and Indiana's getting something else from someone else, and then Miles Turner's coming to New Orleans, I would think is quite high, depending on how New Orleans evaluates Miles Turner and his fit on this team. My desire to obtain Miles Turner has diminished a little bit, but I would still be very high on that. So, I mean, Indiana as a trade partner is in my top three.
I think, Ollie, we got you on you just went through your thoughts, so we'll leave that.
Yeah, and I agree with everything that Fish said, except for that last line. I wouldn't have them in my top three. I think maybe top five. But that's it. Everything else, I love it. I love exactly, and I think exactly the same way David does on this whole scenario.
All right, Fish, so we turn it over to you to wrap with us with the Nets, the team that has been the one that is more often than not been tied to the Pelicans, the one that people have salivated over. So let's see what you got, man.
So I'm going to go over quickly what the Nets have to offer. I was listening actually to a couple Brooklyn Nets-centric podcasts from Brooklyn Nets fans. And those Nets fans, one of the things I thought was interesting was they said, considering the trajectory of their team, while a lot of the national media says, oh, hold on to Caris LeVert because, you know, for the Bradley Beal, right? Their perspective was, considering the fact of how little the ball's going to be in his hands now and his general health history, the Nets should cash in. Now is the time to cash in on LeVert. And if that means you get Drew Holiday, great, because Drew Holiday's a superb fit with our other two franchise cornerstones in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. When I'm looking at the Nets, LeVert has to be included, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I want LeVert on the Pelicans. Outside of that, the next asset on the table for Brooklyn would be Jared Allen. I was talking about those defensive rim protection numbers. Jared Allen last year was 10th in the league at 51.7. The year before that, he was 12th in the league. The year before that, he was 11th in the league. He's a superb rim protector. He's massive. Like, he is a huge human being with a huge wingspan. And a lot of times, as Pelicans fans, when we were watching the team last year, you got to realize that, wow, Derek Favors really is 6'9", and that makes a difference. And he looked a little slow, but it'd be nice to have somebody that's a legitimate 7-footer out there who can really protect the rim, because Derek Favors came off as being too small a number of times, just too short, not long enough to challenge something. So those are the two big headliners. And then they have other things that help match salary depending on who else is coming out. I expect, in listening to Brooklyn Nets fans, that they would prefer to keep a hold of Spencer Dinwiddie, because Spencer Dinwiddie isn't just their sixth man engine off the bench. He's also their Kyrie Irving insurance policy. So I think that they will want to keep on to Spencer Dinwiddie at a higher rate than they might even Caris LeVert. And then they have a couple Europeans who are, I don't know, a couple jars of mayonnaise, and then they have the 19th pick in this draft to offer up. The two-team trade that I would outline would be Drew Holiday goes to Brooklyn. Brooklyn sends back LeVert, Allen, lost his first name, Prince, no picks. That would be it. I'm not a huge fan about that, but I think that's how a two-team deal would work. A three-team deal gets more interesting, because if they're routing Caris LeVert either to Indiana or Atlanta, which are the two teams I think that LeVert makes the most sense on, They send LeVert to either of those teams, and then those teams send prettier assets to the Pelicans, then then Brooklyn needs to add more salary to match, because I can't remember if the trade's likely to push them into the tax area, especially after they re-sign Joe Harris. So they need to attach enough salary, and just Jared Allen to Caris LeVert isn't going to be enough. But if they attach, if they accept the team option on Garrett Temple, then they can include his $5 million salary into this trade, and the salaries even out. Garrett Temple, if he's included in the trade and it's a three-team trade including Atlanta, I think Atlanta would like to have Garrett Temple, because they don't have a reserve point guard. That's one of the questions that they want to answer. So you could send both LeVert and Temple to Atlanta. If Temple's going to be included and you're doing a three-team trade with Indiana, I think Temple makes a lot of sense coming to New Orleans. New Orleans also needs a reserve point guard. That's a question still on the roster. In either of those three-team scenarios where you have LeVert essentially going to either Indiana or Atlanta, if he goes to Indiana, it's a very simple dollars for dollar. LeVert goes into Indiana, and then Miles Turner comes to New Orleans. If LeVert is headed to Atlanta, then Atlanta has a massive amount of cap space. They're also accepting Garrett Temple. And then they would be sending out some combination of the sexy fun assets, which would be the sixth pick and Herter, the wing from their team. So I'm kind of giving you guys two different three-team arrangements. I actually wrote a piece that included a lot of those pieces for a three-team trade. Actually, I think that one was a four-team trade. But those are kind of the options. So take it away.
Before I pass it on to you, the other guys, as Indiana, I would just say I'd rather have LeVert. Like, to me, that he would fit them better than I think even than Atlanta, because Atlanta, you're getting another 6'7" guy, and you're trying to give those minutes to, you know, Cam Reddish and to why am I forgetting his name?
DeAndre Hunter.
So yeah, I think that like another 6'7" guy who's kind of, you know, who also wants to attack the rim with Trae Young. I mean, I think LeVert could work there, because I think he can work anywhere as a teammate. He'll figure out a way. But I think if I'm Indiana, I would rather have him than staying shorter with my backcourt and then overpaying, I think, for a Hayward and paying that money. But that's just Indiana for me. So in this version, Elliot, you get to be David Griffin. So, right. You know, let's hear your thoughts from the Pelicans' perspective on these deals.
Cool. Well, if we're talking that two-way, the two-team deal that's sending Karras, Jarrett Allen, and Torian Prince out picks to New Orleans. I got to have picks there. I think that if you got 13 and 19, you can package those, maybe move up a little bit further. I don't know how high you're going to be able to move up with those picks if you're trading. But obviously, for a lot of Pelicans fans, for a lot of us, Karras has to be on the table, whether it's a two-team trade or a three-team trade. It just doesn't get done without Karras. I like the addition of Allen. I know Zach Lowe said on his podcast that he doesn't think that's going to happen, but I am not Zach Lowe at the moment. I am David Griffin. So I think I'm going to want that 19th pick also. And in exchange for the 19th pick, offer up Darius Miller, because you're losing shooting from Karras. That adds some depth to your roster. And I mean, the Pels have to take Torian Prince to make the money work, but there you go. In terms of the three-team trade, I kind of got lost in all of it, but chances are I'm going to be A-okay with whatever Fish said. So I think that here, well, obviously Karras is going to, like we said, have to be involved, whether it's two-team or three-team. I think the Pels, if the Hawks are involved, you got to come away with that sixth pick. Hopefully come away with Dwayne Dedmon. I think he'll be a solid complementary four to Zion. Kevin Huerter, adding shooting never hurts. And then you look at the Pacers getting involved. You got to come away with Miles Turner. And Karras would more than likely end up in Indiana. I think he'd fit well there. Again, Karras, like you said, going to Atlanta, yeah, you figure it out. I'm playing opposite with Trae Young, but from Griff's perspective, I have to add the 19th pick and maybe exchange Darius Miller in there for the two-team trade and then the three-team trade. As long as the Pels end up with Turner and the sixth pick, if the Hawks are in bar, frick, well, you can't do that. if it's a four-team trade, the Hawks and Pacers are both involved, you come away with Turner in the sixth pick, maybe plus Huerter or plus Dedmon. I'm okay, and I can walk away with that and be happy, and even giving up Drew Holiday.
Would you, if Nikola Melli was asked for?
You can have him. That's okay.
All right, so Ollie, since you are the Nets, what are you thinking?
Oh, I would love to add Drew Holiday for those guys because, according to reports, Kevin Durant now wants Serge Ibaka to end up in Brooklyn as well. So there's even less of a need to keep Jared Allen around, who's obviously not happy, who wants out. So for Sean Marks, I think this is a win-win deal. The only thing I would probably try and maybe keep is Torian Prince, because I don't know who else you have as a defensive long wing that you can rely on that's currently not on a roster anyways. But other than that, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's no qualms at all, I think, from his perspective. But I think that's why we've kind of soured on it. I mean, you guys remember just, you know, I can't remember exactly how many months ago, but we were talking about would even LeVert be included in any kind of deal for Drew Holiday? But now it just doesn't seem like you include LeVert and a few others that doesn't look like that'll be the best deal for the Pelicans. So it's just interesting to see how things have changed if you're just looking at it from that point of view. But no, for the Nets, I think it would be an absolute goldmine to walk with Drew Holiday. Plus, you're keeping him away from possibly ending up on the Boston Celtics or maybe another competitor. So yeah, for the Nets, this is outstanding. You've already got your two stars. You got other good pieces. So to grab in Drew Holiday for a few of them that you're not going to be able to re-sign anyways, right? I mean, I know you've got Karras LeVert long-term, but chances are you're not re-signing Jared Allen for sure. And Torian Prince, yeah, like I've already told you my thoughts on him. So for Sean Marks, it's a total win-win.
And even Dinwiddie's contract being short, there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to afford him.
Yeah, I didn't even talk about him because I was thinking a three-teamer deal. I was just thinking two-team deal. Sorry. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking, you know, if Dinwiddie is – even if you retain him, you've got to be very careful about the salary balance you strike because you may be in position that – yes, he is absolutely your insurance for Kyrie, and knowing Kyrie's injury history, you'd want to have that. Then the problem just becomes if at the middle of this year, if Kyrie is healthy and he's doing Kyrie things and Dinwiddie's not getting the shots or the minutes that he's accustomed to, then are you in position now that you have him going into the final year of his deal at $11.5 million, which is very reasonable, $12 million bucks. And an unhappy Dinwiddie, then you lose that value. So like, that's the thing that if I'm Brooklyn, it's like Dinwiddie is such a difficult read, because if you give him up now, yeah, you're giving up depth. If you wait later, you may not get as much.
The thing about Dinwiddie too is that if Kyrie gets hurt and for an extended amount of time, Dinwiddie comes out, balls out again, scores over 20 points a game this season, then he has all the incentive to leave and get paid, because I think his player option is worth $11 million not this coming season, but the season after that. Why would you stay? Like, if you can go out and get 20 plus million, which I think he could, one of those bad teams, I don't know, like maybe Detroit or something like that, even though he already played in Detroit, why wouldn't you?
No, there's going to be so much money flying in that free agency. He's definitely opting out.
Oh, absolutely. Why wouldn't you? Yeah, he'd be 29 years old, about almost 29 at that point, and that's going to be his last big deal.
Get the bag, man. Get the bag.
But I'm just wondering, though, would if you're Sean Marks, wouldn't you probably rather send Spencer? Because you've got Drew for backup, you know, ball handling behind Kyrie. And, of course, Kevin Durant can handle the ball a lot. And you know they're going to get some kind of vet, right? Vet point guard, too, that they can bring in for the men. So, I don't know. Do you keep Prince or Dinwiddie? Which one do you prefer if you're Sean Marks? Because for the reasons you just stated, David, I would actually be leaning to wanting to sell high on Dinwiddie, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Prince seems like he'd be more valuable for their roster.
Because at least with Prince, you still get perimeter defense with some length.
Yeah, he can play four. He can grab you some rebounds. Yeah, he can.
He's a decent three-point shooter.
He was a much better one. Didn't he slip last year?
He slipped.
But he's going to get a lot easier looks coming up. And the thing that –
true.
When I'm looking at it, what Prince gives the Nets and why they would want to keep him is he can lighten the load for Kevin Durant, especially in the regular season.
Like on the defensive end, particularly.
Yeah, just cruise, just be a 7'1", you know, playing free safety, block some shots, chill.
That's a great point, David, because otherwise you're relying on what, Musa or Kurix off the bench. Yeah.
Or so even Joe Harris in switches with that. And I would say there are going to be times where Joe Harris just isn't tall enough on those switches. And at least with Prince at 6'7", with a little bit more length and a bit more physicality, of course, you'd rather be switched, because I think you're going to have to switch Durant a lot right now this first season back, just to make sure that you're not overtaxing him on that end of the floor.
Let me toss out my big four teamer that I had on the
article,
because I feel like this one makes the most sense. So the Pelicans send out Drew Holiday and their 13th pick. So they're going to send Drew Holiday to the Nets. The Nets are going to send out LeVert and Garrett Temple. They're going to send both of those guys to Atlanta. All right, so Atlanta's getting a backup point guard. And they're also getting LeVert, who has upside. He's going to be – he plugs right in to be their starting shooting guard. He also is going to help the times when Trae Young goes to the bench. He can operate their second unit. If they stagger that a little bit, he's going to raise their ceiling quite a bit. Atlanta, in return, is going to send New Orleans, Herter, and Deadman. They already have Capella at the center, and they're getting – LeVert, who's a substantial upgrade over Herter, who's going to be coming to New Orleans. So they also have to attach the sexy asset, the big thing that the Pelicans want, which would be the 6th pick. Yep. Now, the Nets are also going to send out Jared Allen, but New Orleans isn't going to get him because they're getting Deadman from Atlanta. So the New Orleans routes Jared Allen to the Rockets, who don't have a center, who have a team that's going to be in substantial turmoil, and might be looking to be a little bit more conventional and save money in the process because their owner is a slumlord of restaurants. and so the Pelicans are also going to route their 13th pick there. And so, you know, the Rockets can pick a wing, an Aaron Nesmith or a Devin Vassell if he's available, somebody like that. To be another shooter around James Harden, and they're going to ship Russell Westbrook to the Knicks. You're welcome, grub. I hope you enjoy that experience. And so the Pelicans, what they're going to get on this is they're going to get Herter, which solves short-term, at least, the shooting guard situation because you're sending out Drew Holiday. You're getting the 6th pick from Atlanta. That's the big sexy thing, and that's why Atlanta's getting Caris LeVert, the big blue chip prospect. You're going to get Dedmon, who is a temporary plug at the center position. And, you know, Atlanta has tons of cap space. They can chase after all the guys we would talk about the Pelicans chasing after. Aaron Baines, Alex Len, all of these, you know, serviceable big men that they could get for relatively cheap to be behind Clint Capella, who's their starting center. And then the Rockets, in their desire to save money for their billionaire owner, who's applying for COVID-19 loans, Tillman Fertitta, he's going to send out Robert Covington to save some money because he can't pay his employees to the Pelicans as well. And now the Pelicans have solved their biggest question, which is we don't have any big wings. So they get the sexy asset in six. They get a short-term answer at center with Dedmon. They get a medium-term answer at the wing defensively in Robert Covington, and they also get Herter, who substantially increases their size on the wing, and also he has some creating ability. I wrote about this in my dream scenario that posted a couple days ago. It's been an annual column. Your response?
Yeah, let's go through it, guys. What do you, Elliot? I'll let you lead off. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's a four-way win when you look at it. I mean, the Pels walking away with Covington, they could get that combo guard, possibly Hayes at six. I don't think Okongwu is going to fall that far, but in exchange, you get Dwayne Dedmon, who is, I guess, technically a center. I don't know how tall he is, but
6'10".
6'10". Okay, then he's a center. And he can space. He's a good shooter. You got Herter who can shoot too, and he's under a two-year, $2.7 million contract. So you're looking at that for the Pels. I think across the board, that's a win for them. And you're not really – I mean, you're giving up the 13th pick. Drew kind of seems to be – I mean, he's halfway out the door anyway. That's just where we're at now. And you're really not giving up that much, and you're getting – I don't want to say a haul, but you're getting a pretty good return for it. For the Rockets, I mean, Fish hit it. Fertitta is pretty cheap, and you're getting good value at 13. There's somebody's going to fall. Somebody's going to fall to 13. Allen is very valuable. They're probably not going to pay him. They'll let him walk in free agency. But for the short term, that adds a center to your roster, so you don't have a bunch of guys who are 6'6 and under anymore. And that gives something for Steven Silas to work with. The Nets, you get your defender and Drew, complimentary star. For the Hawks, you get LeVert. 3 years, $16 million. That's worth it. You get your backup guard in Temple. It's a win across the board for everybody, if I have anything to say about it.
Yeah, and to get Dedmon, again, his contract is only $13.3 million per year over the next 2 years. So, you know, this year and next. So, you know, that again, that contract, considering what centers are going for, and the fact that he's a relatively durable guy who, like you said, can shoot and has a decent rebounding percentage, at the very least is an upgraded center than what you have on the roster now. Then, yeah, I think it's if all four teams are willing to do it, yeah, I like it. Ollie?
For the most part, yeah, David, I do like this trade a lot, Fish. Well done. The only two things I'm going to bring up is, one, from Griffin's perspective, you kind of don't like that Dedmon and Covington are going to be encroaching on any 2021 free agency plans. It just feels like I've been saying, New Orleans has some kind of big plan, so you just wonder, will that hinder it? Ollie, but from a talent perspective.
Let me jump in on that, Ollie. The second year of Dedmon's contract, completely unguaranteed.
Oh, oh, that changes. Okay, yeah, I like that. Okay, well, then I don't really have that much of a concern. The other one I want to bring up is, if any team out of these four may complain a little bit, I feel like it would be Atlanta. I don't think that they're getting enough, right? You're walking away with LeVert and Temple, if I understand, but you're giving away Herter, the number six, Dedmon, and I think that was it. But I feel like maybe Atlanta would just ask for a little bit more. That's it. Other than
do
that,
you give them a down-the-road pick? Do you have you add a pick maybe? In
I thought
22
about
Hayes, or 23
right, to place their loss of Dedmon, but yeah, I don't know. And so, I think something small would work. Yeah,
Pelicans have plenty of seconds.
Yeah, I don't even.
You
know
have a lot
Atlanta's
of seconds, but it may.
Seconds.
I mean, even a protected. If you really wanted to make the deal, you know, the Pelicans do have an abundance of picks, so it's not like you can do a swap. I'm saying you can do a swap in a different year. I don't know.
But no, it's a good overall deal. I like that Fish included Houston because I think it's right up their alley on what they should be doing.
Houston is desperate
getting
too.
A pick and
they do
Allen
have to get under.
Real legitimate center. Yeah, if they're going to keep Harden, I think that's a smart plan for them.
Yeah, because it seems as if everybody else in Houston wants out, whether it's Austin Rivers, whether it's it's bad. I understand it's about for Todd. For Todd. Tell me for Todd.
Frito.
The Frito Bandito. but I just – it just seems that culture is so bad that the only way Houston can make itself better – is by trying to do a bunch of different small deals and getting these pieces back in return at ways that you can eventually offload them. But yeah, if I'm Houston, I'm looking for anything right now because Steven Silas got to feel like, man, what the hell have I walked into?
Dude, don't you have to keep James Harden there? I mean, I know the guy wants to get – yeah, he's got to keep him to keep fans happy enough and keep, you know –
but I don't think
Houston
there's the market
and
is going to get you the return
in the team.
I don't think the return is there for Harden.
I think that this deal is really good for Houston in the short term.
Yes.
Because you're saying we're going to offload Westbrook someplace and we're going to mm-hmm. probably get some role players or mm-hmm. not terribly great contracts, but you have Jared Allen. So you have like that. That's an NBA center. You can start Jared Allen. You can start Jared Allen at every game. The idea that Brooklyn wanted to start
DeAndre Jordan
over Jared Allen is absurd on its face. Like, Jared Allen is a superior basketball player in all respects other than not best friends with Kyrie and Kevin Durant. Like,
exactly.
That's the extent of his qualifications. And then if you're Houston, you're also getting a lottery pick in a draft that's pretty heavy on shooting wings, which mm-hmm. I mean, they promoted within for their GM. So still, I mean, if Aaron Naismith's on the table for them when they come on the clock, they have that pick. And since they've mortgaged so much of their future, wouldn't it be nice, at least short term, to have one rookie come in on a first a first round pick? And you're not going to ask him to do anything more than, you know, what he would hope to do, which is just stand in the corner, shoot some threes, learn how to play NBA defense. There, I mean, Houston, despite the fact that everything feels like it's coming apart at the seams, they still have a good front office because they were promoting within. I mean, the rest of those guys were there. I mean, Morey's not doing the job by himself. Let's not give him too much credit. And then, I mean, they're hiring a great staff. I mean, they've got Silas Jr., a little bit of Pelicans news here. They hired Will Weaver, who was going to be possibly an assistant coach for New Orleans. And then
John Lucas is still there because he's really good and close with James Harden. Yeah.
So
it makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's a good wrap there. I think that again, Brooklyn is somebody that everybody is very high on. So I think all of us, would I be wrong in saying we all want to make a deal with Brooklyn and B, that they'd be one of the favored, the top two, three partners, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In some kind of multi-team deal. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, Ollie was talking about getting maybe a pick or something for the Hawks. I was going to say this and then the conversation kind of transitioned. But before we move on to the next thing or before you say what you needed to say there, Grub, mm-hmm. I was going to say the Nets could give up their 19 pick. I mean, there's going to be a ton of ring chasers that are willing to sign exceptions in Brooklyn. So you don't necessarily need a young guy to come in. And if the Hawks take 19, they're looking to get veteran presence, a little bit older there. They take Desmond Bain. That guy's a shooter at 19, and he can play defense. I mean, basically any of the guys that I listed around 19 for the Pels, if you want to go high ceiling, you get Tyrese Maxey there. You can get Isaiah Stewart, who – Derek Murray's really high on. Stewart is a big who can shoot and he can protect the rim.
I like Patrick Williams.
At 19, I don't think they're going to get
him.
Oh,
no, not at 19. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, he won't be there.
There's a lot of options for them at 19 to get better if the Nets are willing to part with their 19th pick.
Yeah, and what's interesting for Houston is they may be pushed really hard because Woj just posted that the market for Westbrook is very slow. And that's not a surprise because, like you said, Houston's going to have to give more than just Westbrook. Like, nobody's going to just take what Russell Westbrook. You're going to have to give something else. And they don't have picks. So it's like they're going to have to trade something as much as they can to get stuff back because they don't have picks. They don't have space. And Russ is going to be they're going to have to make a move before they move Russ.
Well, knowing that, Houston's going to get saddled with a bunch of garbage that they don't want either. So
that's what I'm saying. It's
they're
bad.
Trying to avoid that, it's but bad. There's no way to avoid that. Yeah.
No, not if you're giving out $40 million in salary there. And talking about, well, I saw somebody and post what it was going to be Westbrook to the Clippers for some very good pieces like Pat Beverly and Paul George. I don't understand why they would do Paul George for James for Russell Westbrook.
That sounds Scoop B-ish right there. That's the problem.
Russell Westbrook for James. I mean, Russell Westbrook for the Clippers. Like, that just doesn't seem to make sense alongside Kawhi Leonard, alongside what they have there. It just feels like that doesn't help them at all. I understand their problems with Paul George, but I think you can minimize George if you have to keep him. You can figure out how to work around his issues. Harden becomes the focus of your team no matter where he goes.
Where I like Westbrook to end up possibly is a Charlotte, you know? Michael Jordan, he loves doing stupid shit, so I could foresee him doing that.
There and the New York Knicks are the only two places.
The Knicks would do it just to sell some tickets.
I mean, if they can sell at this rate. But I just saw that they're interested in Gordon Hayward, too. So
who is? Because
the Knicks got a shitload of cap space and a shitload of players that they can move who are on expiring deals.
Why are you adding a 30-year-old freaking wing that's on a $34 million expiring? That is so Knicks. Ugh.
That's the Knicks, yeah. Like, they're just desperate.
But they're supposed to have anybody, right? Leon Rose. I mean, I thought this guy's supposed to have at least some kind of a plan. I don't know.
Look, man, Gordon Hayward was listed as a power forward, and when the Knicks see power forward, it's
out. Gotta have it. You gotta have power forwards.
That's so true, Fish.
If you don't have seven power forwards on that roster at all times, it's just not going
to
work.
Did you hear where – yeah. Toppin's like got a guarantee to go there, right? If he drops to
God, eight, please, no.
It's like a guarantee. I was laughing.
No, no, no. It's just that's like Julius Randle again. No.
Well, he's better than Randle, I think, but it's just funny. It's the power.
Not that much. Like,
I think he's got a better pro. I think he's going to be better than Randle.
He's also 22, so he's
not next year, David, but down the road.
But do you think he's a 2010 guy? Because at the very least, Randle is a 2010 guy with a bad team. Do you think Toppin?
We had him, and he stopped rebounding for us for like three.
He gave up the rebounding. Absolutely, yeah, he gave it up.
He didn't do anything but try and score. That was it.
Yeah, because he was trying to get paid. He was trying to get paid and get the Knicks to give him a stupid deal. That's what he got.
Yeah.
So it worked.
All right, let's not rehash that terrible.
Yes, we've wrapped on our series, so we've done them all. Ollie's going to again put together a wrap up of this, and I guess as a conclusion. Ollie, we're going to post the trade suggestions on one thing and let folks vote on them on our site.
Yeah, I couldn't decide whether we want to do it like that, just post it on social media or us even talk about it. Well, maybe we should post it on Twitter. Maybe we could pod on it. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
You guys want to do.
We'll figure it out. But going into as we're approaching, the draft gets closer and closer. We're only 5 days away. So if you have a chance, go back and not just listen to this one, but listen to the three previous ones. Elliot, you've got some stuff coming up for the Believe podcast?
I'm sure that we'll get somebody from the Celtics to continue the Jrue Holiday trade series. We're keeping up with the draft and stuff like that, too. We'll probably have one more pre-draft podcast coming up here soon, whether it's with Ethan Piotr or Derek Murray, maybe day of. Also, I'll be on ESPN 1420 with Word with G, with him and Sam Dusenberry Jr. on Wednesday to do a pre-draft thing. So pretty excited about that. But we'll always have content for the listeners on Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans, that's for sure.
And Ollie, Fish, you guys got something coming up soon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to post, like you said, the recap of this, but I'm also going to give kind of like my big board or what I hope the Pelicans are chasing, because with all the rumors flying, they want a top pick in their arsenal on who they may be looking at least my good guess.
Fish? Or are you just going to keep it?
I mean, I'm going to keep writing and keep tweeting all these trade proposals, but thankfully we'll get to the point where trades actually happen.
Right.
The moratorium, they haven't reported the exact time where it's going to lift, but something like 72 hours is the expectation around the league. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, this time next week, not only will the draft be concluded, but by this time next week, free agency will be open. Yep. Hopefully, as Pelicans fans, we will already be hearing about the fact that Brandon Ingram has agreed to an extension. I mean, a new contract. Josh Hart has agreed to an extension. I mean, within 7 days, I would expect that Jrue Holiday is probably going to be traded. The Pelicans have added at least one, if not more than one player in the draft. I mean, the next 7 days, this roster is going to have a thorough makeover.
And I, on Harden to Paint, my podcast on Monday, Antonio Daniels, broadcaster for the Pelicans, will join me and we'll discuss specifically the draft from his perspective and what he thinks the Pelicans are going to do. So a busy week ahead for everyone associated with the Bird Rights and the Bird Calls. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you subscribe and rate and share. And we love doing these. This one was a little bit harder. We've said this offline than doing AD trade packages because of the way we feel about Jrue and understandably the way fans feel about Jrue as well. But it was something we needed to do, something we had to do, and I'm glad we did it. So for the guys, for Elliot, for Fish, for Ollie, I am David Grubb, and this has been another episode of the Bird Calls. Until the next time, let's go Pels.
For listening to the Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
All right, now we are recording, so shut up.